Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintos.
We gather here at our kitchen table once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in the heart of Iowa. And community radio is a very good thing. Well, we're going to talk about what we usually talk about today. We're learning to feed ourselves. It seems a skill that we have to always kind of reteach ourselves. It's too easy to feed ourselves stuff that is not really food sometimes. And gardens and are coming back. People are more interested in gardens and organic food. And actually, people are interested in small-scale poultry. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Chickens in backyards. Who would have thought chickens in backyards? There's been a growing interest. Onion Creek Farm, where I live, we've incorporated chickens into our little Dominion out there. We've had chickens for about 30 years, and if you have chickens, you have chicken stories.
And chicken eggs.
And chicken eggs, yes. And way back when, I learned that you could order chickens through the mail. Who would have thought?
Yeah, it sounds like a joke, doesn't it?
It does. But actually, that's how I started getting my chickens. There's a place called Murray McMurray Hatchery, and they've been there for a long time. Eric, we're here to talk about chickens. So, joining us at our kitchen table today is Cynthia McClure, and she's got backyard poultry, and she also is a familiar face here at the community radio station. Actually, she's being our engineer today.
Yeah, it's been a while, so I'm starting off with a rough start. I wasn't communicating well with the ladies at the beginning because I was excited chatting with them about what's going on. But, chickens.
We're working here. She's going to talk about the chickens and ducks in her backyard. And she recently had a visit to an event. Murray McMurray Hatchery had its first ever, well, I suppose you'd call it chicken festival, wouldn't you?
I would definitely call it. I think it's a good leg up on poultry. it was a wonderful festival.
And they kind of, that's their business is backyard chickens, right?
Their backyard business, but they also have a few exotic birds if you look into their catalog. And they carry like guinea fowl, and if people want to bring prairie restoration, they've got prairie chickens and I think some other things.
Really?
I think. Oh. I remember seeing them there.
And they have all kinds of breeds, right?
Of tons chickens. Of breeds.
Yeah. Oh,
apple yard,
fun.
Some really rare duck breeds and really rare chicken breeds. So it's, yeah.
So did they have like, what's the Polish ones with the top knots on
yeah,
the
they
heads?
Yeah, they have the fancy ones.
Silken ones with the little fluffy.
Yes, they have.
Oh, I love them.
Silkies. They carry silkies. And, mm-hmm. and they. Usually I just get brown layers because then I usually only have to deal with one rooster because they always give you a free one. And bless them.
Give those roosters away.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you live on a farm outside of city limits, roosters are great because you get an alarm clock in the morning. But otherwise, that is a nuisance pet, and you cannot have roosters.
Yes. You live in the city limits.
Yes,
so
I do.
Talk about growing poultry in your backyard. What do you have, and what's your setup like?
Well, we had a custom coop by a young man in Story City. I don't know if he's still doing that. It was a custom coops, and I can't even remember his name, but he was like an Eagle Scout, this lovely overachiever. And my neighbor worked with his father, and they brought the coop over after they finished it, and it was huge, and it's thermal insulated, got
serious
windows,
business, yeah,
got big windows, got a big open door, got an automatic door. You know, my husband put that in, and underneath the chickens when it's raining or snowing or something weird, they go underneath, and you know they're pretty. Yeah, it's just great. And we had a fence put around it so they're protected. And over the years through attrition, through basically them being killed off. We figured out how to close everything off so predators can't get in. You know, it's all these rookie mistakes you make. And
Well, the predators are raccoons, foxes.
Voles. You know, not voles. What are those? They're like a weasel.
Mm-hmm.
Anything.
Lana foxes, has had that.
Foxes are in Ames. Yes. They are lovely. And they are...
And they love chickens.
They love chickens. They love ducks. They love any little creature. And, rabbits, if you got them. I mean, because they're predators. But I've noticed a lot less wild rabbits around the neighborhood.
Yes.
Because of the foxes and coyotes occasionally.
Ha! I could use more predators at my place. I think the rabbits are just surprising. Now, I live not in town. I live on the edge of town in the country. Way too many rabbits.
I'm surprised
this year.
Because you have coyotes out there.
We do have coyotes, but they must not be very hungry. But because we've got way too many rabbits, I just they're kind of they're ever so lovely to look at. But then I think, oh, how come I'm not having my lettuce come in like I wanted it to? They're kind of hungry this time of year, and they're kind of doing
a job. There must be no like fox dens or anything.
No, I've heard that. Fox and coyotes don't like each other, so they tend to avoid each other.
So you live in coyote country.
We do.
Aren't going to be.
Oh, good. Well, so let's get back to talk more about chickens. And you recently went to the very first ever Murray McMurray Chicken Festival. Tell us about it. And you got to talk to somebody.
Wait, where was it?
It was up over in Webster City, and it was. It was a sustainability fest, basically. Mm-hmm. So they talked about everything from cooking from scratch, and I went to a little event and saw the lady talk about it, and she was, I think, a Mennonite, former Mennonite. So she's not necessarily wearing the clothing and doing the things that they used to do. She's very modern, but she carries that skill of home cooking. And her kids were being affected by the food that they were eating in boxes and things. And she saw that decline happen in them. And so she started making things from scratch, and their behavior changed.
Well, a couple of, was it two or three shows ago where we did the show about ultra-processed foods and the negative health effects?
Preservatives and things like that. And if you have little people and they are in that developmental stage, lots of things affect them. And, she went back to her home, what she learned from her grandmother and mother, and it didn't take long. It's just a little more time prep, and that's the payoff, is that the kids are healthier, and she preps a lot more things and gets things from scratch done.
Huh.
And it's cheaper, long run, by far.
That's what, it's amazing. People, all of a sudden remember that they're parents or their grandparents or somebody, there used to be chickens, and their eggs used to come from chickens, and maybe
I think they still do, but
okay. But it's really heartening to know that people,
chickens that you know, right?
Get to know your chickens. And Murray McMurray, this hatchery, has been kind of a fixture in Central Iowa.
Yeah,
for
I think
a long
like
time.
Like over like what 50 years or something. Or I mean,
something.
Since the beginning of probably Iowa, they were doing it. I mean, it's like a long time. You could look at their website. But let's see. Yeah, I want to blame Helen Gunderson. Lovely Helen Gunderson, if you're listening, bless you, because you turned me into a chicken lady. I mean, it's like once you go there, you can't really go back. Yeah. I mean, you can basically put out all the food that you're not going to eat. Like you have that tuna casserole that's just gone south. Put it out. They'll eat it. You have food that you don't eat, scraps, the peelings of anything, an apple.
They're excellent composters,
too. Oh, my gosh. And then the amount of compost I get from my garden, you just have to wait like 6 months because it's chicken poop is hot.
It's very, very rich. Yeah.
Very rich in nitrogen, and it burns your plants, but you put it on a compost pile, and then you have the nicest
soil.
Well,
and when I lived in California, and I could have chickens out year-round, I had a way back in the corner of my yard, I had a place where I just threw all the scraps. And the chickens turn it because they go back and scratch mm-hmm. through it. And, you know, you don't have to do anything. It's just,
yeah,
they're naturals for this.
Yeah. And, and you can, at the end of the season, let them run through your garden and they will take everything out and clean it up and scratch everything down.
And they will end up with eggs. And if you're so inclined, a chicken or two.
Not there yet. I don't do any of that.
You have to have numbers to be able to do that.
Yeah, we just have egg layers, brown egg layers. And recently got a pair of ducks. They're Apple Yard, you know. And they're an English breed of duck that is.
Apple Yard.
Yeah, they're kind of a rare breed. Mm-hmm. And let me just say, ducks in the winter in Iowa is very challenging.
Oh, I think it would
be. Oh, yeah. So there are a lot of, I would say, pluses and minuses. I love duck eggs, and I've learned how to make salted egg yolks. Very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Umami flavor that...
The duck egg.
With the duck egg.
Yeah, because they're bigger, the yolks.
They're bigger.
Oh,
and they're,
what a good idea.
And they're actually so much sturdier than in a chicken egg. I tried it with a chicken egg, and the outer coating of the yolk is really touchy because they'll break on the salt that you put them on. So you take a duck egg, you put very fresh duck egg, and you put it on a layer of salt, and you cover it with salt, and you let it sit. You can let it sit overnight or a week long in the fridge, and then you take it and then you bake it at a very low temperature, like 200, for, you know, however long, half hour, an hour, whatever, just very low temperature. It cooks, and then you have this egg yolk that's kind of solid, and you can take a microplaner and put it over anything that you want, an umami
people
flavor.
People have compared it to like Parmesan cheese, kind of, for that rich umami flavor.
Over a microplaner, it ends up looking like Parmesan, and it's salty.
Uh-huh.
So if you wanted to put it over something, gosh, as fancy as like caviar, it would be great. Or as simple as a pasta salad. It's like really yummy, but you have to bake them because of the nature of eggs, and salting just preserves them. It sucks all the moisture out of them. So you're just left with a salty surprise. And I looked at a lot of very shishi Asian recipes, and they sell salted duck yolks in a jar, but they kind of look all mushed up and kind of sad. But but if you have your own, they stay intact in microplane.
Well, good. Thank you for that encouragement.
Fun. They do have, I've seen duck eggs at Wheat's Field before.
They do.
They're also not cheap.
At the farmer's market, they have them, too.
If you can get really fresh duck eggs from the source, then you try that.
Yeah,
and the egg whites, there's a Viking cracker that I make with, like, chia seeds and all these basically seeds that you would make a cracker with. And just use the duck egg yolks to bind it together and bake it at a low temperature. And then it comes out like, wow. And then I just put Aleppo pepper on it and some, like, maybe, what's it called? Lemon pepper. And it kind of flavors it up really nice. And you can put that on top of a salad.
Well, for those of you who have never tried duck eggs, they taste like a very good, rich chicken egg. And they're bigger than a chicken egg. But they're not, you know, if you're hesitating to try it, they're not that different from chicken eggs. So don't be put off by them. They're beautiful.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. It's some kind of a, it's a special thing.
Good. Well, let's listen. Cynthia took her recorder and went to the festival, the chicken festival, and she talked to some interesting people.
And my husband, Christopher McClure, was my helper, so I got him to be the roving reporter during Murray McMurray Fest. Here we go.
Hello, I'm here at the Murray McMurray Hatchery Fest. You know, it's about sustainability, and I'm going to be talking with a gentleman here, Bud Wood.
I'm one of the owners. Tom and I own it together.
Well, then you're the man to talk to. What inspired you to do this Midwest Fest, you know, sustainable agriculture event?
We've been going to shows like this, and where Tom has become a speaker and speaks at the show about poultry and stuff. We always have a vendor vent and a tent and do that kind of thing. And people just encourage us to have our own. And there aren't any like this in the Midwest, and so this was Murray Fest of the Midwest. It was one of the first in this area.
Well, I know this is the first time you've done it, and for full disclosure, I do buy chickens and ducks from y'all.
Well, thank you.
And I wish you just had a chicken place or a duck place here in Iowa so that I could go and pick up ducks, because I have to get them in the mail that way. But right. Yeah, so anything you want to say about this that our listeners would be interested in?
I'm just very pleased how this all came about and is working. We have people here from probably 40 different states throughout the Midwest, Chicago, Minneapolis, Omaha, Des Moines were the big draws, but we have people as far away as Maine here today. I started with McMurray Hatchery back in 87. I was their contract programmer, and I wrote their software for them. And then in 2000s, I came in as a partner, and in 2012, my partners left. And then in 2014, Tom came in, my son-in-law, to help me, and I retired this year.
So you are just the man behind the scene making this happen? Or
that's right.
That's excellent.
Yeah, I'm just here to support and do whatever I need to do and help people out. So,
is Murray McMurray doing anything interesting that you'd like to share with the public?
We have been in business for 107 years, and tomorrow we're having a chick sale. Because of the 4th of July, we weren't able to ship this week. And so the people here at the fest can come and buy chicks from us tomorrow morning. We're also organizing a tour of England next year, and Charles Downing is going to be part of that, so they can do that. So we're always doing new breeds, and we're always doing animal agriculture type stuff.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm here with my husband, Christopher McClure. My name is Cynthia McClure, at Murray McMurray Fest, and it's all about sustainable agriculture and homesteading and things like that, being basically more sustainable. I'm going to ask my husband what his impressions are.
And we spent the last half hour in the show arena listening to a presentation from a woman who is talking about cooking from scratch and how to make it possible with a large family. Can you please say your name?
Janelle Anderson.
Hi, Janelle. Hi, I'm Chris with KHOY. And so can you say why you're here?
Yeah, so I was honored to be one of the speakers here this weekend, and I spoke on family milk cows on the homestead or on farms.
Okay. Well, how long have you been doing this work?
Speaking here in this kind of realm only for this past year, but before that, it's definitely been a part of my history. Always been around animals, though. That's how I grew up.
Okay.
Yeah. We farm and raise kids. We're in southern Middle Tennessee, and so we have beef cattle. We have a couple family milk cows. We raise chickens. We have meat birds that we sell to people, turkeys, pigs, hogs, all the things we sell off of our farm.
So what do you see for the future in sustainable farming?
I see a lot of hope. You know, I've talked to a lot of people that came here today, and number one, they were just so thankful that McMurray Hatchery put this on for them so that they could gather with other like-minded people and learn. But the second thing is I think people come here and they're going to leave encouraged because they know that small family farms in their communities are what is going to just thrive in the future here. And so everybody is going to leave here encouraged and ready to do that or support those that are.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Chris.
Good. That was some thoughts from the Murray McMurray Chicken Festival. And I certainly hope this festival continues. It sounds great. It sounds great. I heard there were vendors and also, well, besides all the speakers and things, what are some of the, did you see any vendors that were selling some interesting chicken things? It's amazing. This is America. So we have devices for all of our interests, and you wouldn't think that chickens would need a lot of hardware, but they do. There's things that they do.
Well, this is the Midwest, and it's winter. So what do you use to keep the water from freezing? You get a heater. If you have a metal container, today I actually went online and purchased two new plastic heated water things that I'm going to go pick up after this from Tyson's. We have ducks, so we need a little pond, and I'm downsizing from my 100-gallon stock tank to a 40-gallon one because it's just a lot of water, and I have a very stressed-out tree where all the water goes. And it's just little things like that. You have to make sure your environment is predator-proof because nothing like seeing a bunch of feathers in your grass and knowing that your flock is gone to kind of dishearten you to kind of just go, this is just too much. But, I got a giant 110-pound Great Pyrenees Anatolian dog that protects my critters from other animals, and he wants to be doing this all the time. If I bring him at night, he will cry.
He wants to be out there.
He wants to be out there. He wants to be outside. And when it's snowing, he loves it. It's raining, he doesn't like it, but he'll be out there. The only time is when it's hot. So this coming up section of 90-degree weather, he's going to be whining at me inside because I will put him in an air-conditioned house. Because,
he'll watch.
Yeah, he gets heat stress because he has long hair. And he's a really pretty dog. And he's really nice, but he is a guardian livestock. That's his job, and he will do it. He will yell at squirrels and foxes, and he would, if he got loose, he would not give that fox any quarter. He would take it out. So,
good.
Yeah.
I didn't think Great Pyrenees did poultry. I thought they were more a flock. But, well, a flock is a flock, so there you go.
Well, he's a Great Pyrenees Anatolian, so he's brindle colored. I'm going to show you a little picture of him.
Well, we'll hold it up to the microphone.
So yeah. And he's really, 110 pounds. He should be about 140. But he is a giant dog. And my small dog is a German Shepherd who's 85 pounds. Mm-hmm. So, here's Buddy and Leo in a swimming pool. Buddy's kind of laying down in it, and you can't really see him. But he's a big boy. And he brings in dirt and hair, but I know that my guardian livestock, my flock is safe. So
my Australian shepherds were very good at chasing coyotes away from the chickens.
Yeah, bless
and
them.
Stuff.
And they are.
They're herding animals.
Yeah, and he's very impressive when the mailman comes and he's standing up or UPS and his head sticks over a 5-foot fence. So, it is a challenge having him and taking care of him in the winter, as you know, mm-hmm. Lana. Mm-hmm. And, it's just you work with it, and you try not to get too fancy. If you find something very simple that works, then you do that. And you wait till the bad weather's over, and then you do what you can.
You learn a lot of things, yes.
Yeah, and the big thing is any leftovers, they're gone, and they're taken care of, and they're turned into eggs.
Composting.
Yeah, and it's not something that's very inexpensive to begin with.
I found my chickens didn't like banana peels or orange peels, but the rest of it...
No, not like that, or onion skins.
They don't like onions and...
citrus.
I often wondered if it was the acidity, onions and citrus, not so much.
No.
I mean, they'll kick them around, but they're not going to eat them. So
yeah, but they'll go in the compost pile and break down, and the worms will get to them, and other little creatures.
Anyway.
And I have a family of mice living in my chicken run underneath these bricks where I keep the water and stuff, because I move it and they show up, because there's lots of little leftovers. So there's a whole ecosystem out there, and I've actually caught mice, like three mice, and a possum hanging out and just sneaking food and doing their thing, getting into our coop. And, we took a picture. It was just kind of cool. There's a lot of wildlife that shows up.
You know, the chickens will eat the mice, especially the babies.
Oh, the little, yeah. Trust me, they will do that in a heartbeat. And so once the girls go in the coop and there's extra stuff out there, mice found their ecosystem. And they hang out, they dig underneath because we have a big litter level of wood chips that we put down because the smell is just horrendous if you let it. And then we have fly catchers. There's this real farmer, those fly catchers that, you put out. They're not the strips, but they're...
How many chickens do you have?
About 15, maybe less than with the ducks. We had a couple that just, maybe they got...
you need a little space for these things, yeah.
Yeah, we have a good run that's like, I don't know, 40 feet, and then it's by, I don't know, 5 feet or so. And they have that. And we used to let them run the yard, but then they just ate everything, and I had no grass. And now I have my big dogs, and I have no grass. So I just, it's like one of those things. I had it all, I had grass growing, I had landscaping, and all this.
Cynthia,
and now it's gone.
You need a farm.
Yeah, I know.
You have a farm.
You
like
know,
Lana has.
Yeah, I personally think having a house with grass growing and goats on top would be my dream house, like the Shire. Call
oh,
it
the
Shire.
On
work.
The
yeah,
grass
yeah.
roof.
Like, yeah, yeah. Call it like
you
the Shire.
You need some more. That's
like that,
good.
If I won the lottery, that's what I would do. I would make Shirewa, and it would be just like a little village and have a little pub. It would just be awesome.
Well, you learn a lot of things. We'll be back to talk more poultry with Cynthia and poultry and other things. This is KHOI. This is Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about backyard chickens. People are taking the plunge and giving all this whole new thing a try. I remember I've had chickens for a long time, but not always. I remember it was back, maybe 30 years ago now. I was living on a small farm, or as people would say, an acreage. You have an acreage out there. And we had the good luck of meeting a man who was touring through Iowa giving lectures and things, and he stayed at our farm for a while. His name was Bill Mollison. Bill Mollison was
a big guy.
He is no longer with us, but there was this interesting man. Bill Mollison showed up at our farm and gave...
What's the name of the system that he...
Permaculture.
Permaculture.
He's
Australian, right?
Yeah. He sort of invented this whole thing. I didn't know who he was at the time. He just sort of showed up. My husband said, well, he's going to stay at our house and he's going to give a few lectures here in town. What a wonderful man. And he looked around our place and says, you know, you ought to have some chooks. Some chooks, which is what they call them down in Australia. And so we've had chooks ever since, and it has been a learning experience. And I ordered my first from Murray McMurray because of, at the time, people did have chickens, but it wasn't the big boom it was now. But Murray McMurray's been providing chickens to people for a long time, and you open up the catalog and it's like a garden catalog with colors and promises. Oh, this one's a good eater, this one's a good mother, this one is really gentle, this one will, oh. So you pick what you think is going to be a good flock, and You watch. You learn a lot of things from chickens. Yes. So although I had aunts and uncles who lived on farms and grandparents, and yes, I had gathered eggs before as a young kid, but I had a lot to learn. How did you learn about chickens, Cynthia? Was it something your family always did, or did you learn from scratch?
Well, we've always had animals, and the most exotic animal we ever had was a monkey. I don't know if it was a spider monkey or capuchin because I was really young, but it would get very excited and ride our, what was it? It was an Irish Shedder around the house, and it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life. And the monkey had to go after it. It stole my dad's food because my dad was the dominant male, and it was showing something like, you know, aggression. And my mom got it because that's just what my family did. Anyway, so we didn't have chickens. I believe she was raised with chickens, and my dad maybe have had it because my grandma and they had lots of kids on a, you know, house in North Dakota, you know. So, but I went to the co-op, and they did a bike tour around Ames about sustainability. And that's where I went and ended up and saw Helen Gunderson's yard and the chickens. She had a little flock, you know, 5-6 chickens. She used her garages where the chickens go in and they lay, and then she winterizes them then there. And she had her trees and, you know, raspberries and chestnuts and, you know, she was like this icon of, I admired that.
She was her urban farm.
Her urban farm in Ames, and she, you know, she's just very quiet and nice and. So she was, she showed me, and it was like, I told my husband that, and me being the stubborn person that I am, I kept that in my mind, and I was going, we're going to need to get, you know, because I got some chickens, and I need a chicken house, and my neighbor Becky.
Chickens. You got to have a situation for them.
Yeah, all this came about, and my husband was gracious enough to kind of indulge me, and I guess I cook from scratch, and he likes my cooking, so we have done and ventured this in law. It's not cheap to get started, but there were a lot of vendors at the Murray McMurray Fest, and one of them was the egg, and I saw that, and it's just like a chicken house that you put in. It's all plastic, and I believe it's some of it's recycled plastic, and it's a wash and wear kind of thing. And if I don't have my coop, I would probably get something like that. Mine's much bigger. Mine's like a dollhouse big. I mean, I'm sure it's just, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, it's not cheap to get started. And it is a venture, but I, you know, and you have to work around your vacations finding somebody to watch your chickens and you know, it's like pets. But, the advantage is that when the crisis with the eggs happened and they were, you know, the bird flu, and that is an issue. You have to kind of keep the flock separate from any wild birds. And, yeah, you have eggs. It's a steady supply. Wintertime is the worst. They are light sensitive, so
they don't lay much. In
they
the winter.
Lay very little, like one egg a day, maybe. One of them is just still, you know, or between them all, they one egg a day. But when spring comes, you're getting everybody's laying eggs, so you have a dozen or more a day, and so you know what to do with them. You find your neighbors that you like, or you find a community that is willing to buy them, or you know, because that helps pay for feed and
well,
everything like that.
Eat
you eat them. You learn you like egg salad, and you can also freeze eggs.
Oh, I've never tried that.
Yeah.
You can
in the shell or out of the shell?
I think you have to take them out of the shell.
I think so.
Yeah,
because the
shell bursts because frozen.
I've never done that, but I started chicken rearing. I used to live in Southern California, and my daughter, who's now like 52, so she was maybe 4 years old, we went to visit a vineyard because I was already in the food business down in the desert, and the farmer said, oh, have you ever seen green eggs? Well, I'm thinking Dr. Seuss here, right? He said, no, we really have green eggs, and he showed my daughter, who was just gobsmacked and delighted with the whole things. These were Araucana chickens, so we're talking 50 years ago, And
that was a rare egg back then.
It was, but I'll be darned, the farmer within a week was driving up to Los Angeles and brought 3 or 4 chickens right to me. And then, of course, we had to build a coop because we had to keep the chickens for my daughter. And
that was nice of you.
Yeah, it was. It was wonderful, and she enjoyed it so much. When she grew up, she had chickens for her children, too. But the funniest part of the story was, you know, you learn that they lay eggs, and they start nesting, and you let them sit on the eggs. So the first time I hatched, let them hatch 4 eggs, I got 4 roosters out of 4 eggs. Well, not good odds.
Oh, yeah, that's if you like gambling, this is kind of a gambling situation, because the eggs, you cannot pick what you're going to get.
No, but you know, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're doing it for the fun of the children, you know, you try everything. You just let nature run its course, and there we were. We had an awful lot of roosters.
Did your daughter go into 4-H? Because that's when that's the reason to have those kind of roosters.
She was a complete city kid.
This
was in the backyard in Hollywood, right?
They don't have a 4-H group in Hollywood. 4-H
kind of things. No.
Hey, Hollywood hillbillies are awesome.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun, and we just kept having chickens for the children. And the eggs were a really good byproduct. I remember the first time. My aunts, I grew up around poultry, but I didn't think much about it. So once I had my own chickens, I said, oh, and where did this egg come from? It came from the bottom of the chicken, right?
What, do you think, did you think they waved a wand or something?
I don't, you change your concepts real fast here.
It's a barnyard education, or yep. Basically learn stuff on the farm that they won't teach in school.
And they can't. It's a visceral experience, you know.
Yeah,
it's hands-on. Like, yep, this is how it works.
Yeah, and
this
you
is where all eggs come from.
And you learn to defend yourself from a rooster.
Oh, my goodness. I have had some attack roosters.
Oh, they get very territorial. They're like tiny dogs, and tiny dogs are not going to let you near something. Those roosters are very protective of their hens.
Well, and this I did not know, and I learned from my roosters have what are called spurs. So on the back of their legs, they have these pointy, they're like about 2 inches long, and they're hard as, and so when they're attacking you, they do this weird thing. They run up to you, they leap into there, and they fly and turn their legs so that the spurs are going to hit you. And it hurts.
It hurts badly.
Yeah, they're showing you their dinosaur part. The Science Center in Des Moines had a really nice exhibit about showing the evolution of dinosaurs, velociraptors no less, I think something similar, to chickens. And the makeup of the spurs are very similar. And they're... You know, if we saw actually velociraptors, maybe they had feathers. You know, we don't know these things. So, you know, if they were giant feathered chickens that, you know, evolution brought down to a very small size that people could eat and then just, you know, raise. Because, yeah.
They're incredible. I mean, the worst rooster I ever had, he was coming at me. I grabbed the nearest stick and I whacked him so hard, he like fell over on the ground, and I thought I'd killed him. And I went, oh, dear. I mean, I didn't mean to kill him. I just wanted to dissuade him. So I went in the house to do something and think what to do with the dead rooster. And I come back out, and he's up and at it.
They are pretty resilient.
I just
resilient.
Knocked him out.
They're pretty resilient. And there were winters here that I thought, you know, this is not good for them, but they survive. The ducks survived. The chickens survived.
Well, they have all those feathers, and they kind of huddle up next to each other.
And the polar vortex, they didn't come out. But, you know, if it's snowing, they'll wait till a few make tracks to where they can see the ground, because they're, you know, the whites, they don't like stepping on the white snow.
Yeah.
But, it's just...
And if there's sun, even in the winter, they like to come out and...
Yeah, roost out, yeah.
Sit in the sun a little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
it's so much fun.
Yeah, you get to be the chicken person, you know? And they do, if you raise them by hand, they are loyal. They will want to sit on your lap. They're like little dogs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, ours always had names, and...
Yeah.
They are very very kid friendly.
Some of them can.
Except the roosters. You gotta watch out for the roosters.
Caveat. Yeah. Yeah. Unless unless the rooster was raised by the kid, then they're very protective. And it's livestock. And people that have raised animals know the difference.
I used to like to get all kinds of different colored ones. And just because to look out the window and you see them, and it's like a flower garden, you know?
It's like a movable flower garden.
Right. They come in so many colors, and, you know, there's the fluffy silkins, and then there's the exotic Polish that have these top knots that look like they think they're rock and roll stars or something.
Yeah.
I mean, they are hilariously funny.
Well, the county fairs are happening now, so people can go in and look at livestock, and if they like a certain breed, they can, you know, write that down and then go check out catalogs.
When time comes for the big state fair,
the chicken exhibition,
the exotic rabbits are fun too,
yes,
but the chickens are really, really worth it. You know,
yeah,
the visuals of all, even in cages, they still are lots of fun to look at.
Yeah. Well, I've had chickens for a long time, and I used to name all my chickens, but they're all named Sunday dinner for me right now, all of them.
I do kind of keep
one rooster because it's nice to have a rooster that is kind of the alpha out there, and I always pick one that does not attack me. Give him enough hens to take care of.
Right, not all roosters are nasty.
But you get
one once in a while.
Yeah, but still, they really, on my farm, they really are named Sunday dinner. Yes, they are. You're listening to KHOI. This is Community Radio. You can find out more about Community Radio by going to www.khoifm.com. ORG, find out more about the fine program we have here and about the Donalana Kitchen. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. I have a poem I want to share. Actually, it's a poem that sort of reads like prose, but it's a little story. It's a little story about guinea hens, cherry trees, and Midwest summer storms. And this is from a poet from Wyoming. She was the
guinea hens. By the way, are those funny looking birds with polka dots all over them? I tried my hand at. Will not nest in the coop. They go up in the trees.
Guinea fowl are an interesting sort of bird. I must say they are semi wild. They're noisy. They look like little spotted bowling balls, and they're
very good eating.
Oh, they're wonderful little things.
And they eat bugs, including ticks.
Much.
They will eat anything moving on the ground.
Grasshoppers.
Anything that you think is predatory. What are those called? Japanese beetles.
Yeah.
My chicken love Japanese beetles.
Mm-hmm. Well, also they're sort of like our neighbors had some for a while, and a pair of them sort of adopted us, and I didn't care for them. I mean, yes, they can take care of themselves just fine, but they're sort of like peacocks. Noisy, they will guard the front door.
They're smaller than peacocks, but yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, they're Very interesting birds.
But guineas are wonderful. This is a kind of a remembrance about childhood, and childhood in northern Missouri. This is from a poet named A. Rose Hill, A. Dot Rose Hill. Rose Hill is a poet in Wyoming. She was the Wyoming Poet Laureate a couple of years ago. And at full disclosure here, she's also my husband's cousin. So three cheers for Rose out in Wyoming now. But she talks about growing up in northern Missouri. This is her poem called Resurrection. I remember those gray speckled guineas. I have no idea why my mother and dad had a flock of perhaps 10 birds, but they were never confined. I remember finding eggs they laid in odd spots, small rounded eggs with very hard shells. They were good to eat, but small. Never knew the birds to nest, but maybe they were all hens. Who could tell? They mostly roosted in a couple of cherry trees not far from the house. We never harvested any cherries. The guineas ate them all. I do remember picking those cherries once and trying to pit them. What a mess. As we did do few with a crochet hook. As kids, my sisters and I were not very efficient, but we did manage a pie from them, as I recall. As to the guineas, Missouri is prone to extreme weather, and I remember one particularly frightening storm when the sky turned green and we were beset by thunder and lightning, plus baseball-sized hail. The Rhode Island Reds and Roosters, like any self-respecting chicken, went into the henhouse to roost in the storm's darkness, while the guineas continued to roam their chosen territory under cherry trees. When it was over, we found the guineas dead under those trees. We gathered them up in preparation for a burial funeral, but before we could complete our gruesome task, the guineas revived and ran around squawking. They returned to their familiar haunts, seemingly none the worse for wear. None the worse for wear for having been beamed to unconsciousness by hailstones. That's a little reading there called Resurrection. I guess guineas must be tough little birds.
Yes. I guess they're like that rooster that I clubbed over the head. Right?
It's a very Lazarus moment.
Yeah.
he's a miracle. So they were knocked out by the hail. How big? Yeah.
They said baseball size hail.
That's wow.
Well, of course, you must remember, chickens and guineas in particular, not big brain cavity. Maybe, you know.
No, they didn't. They don't have a weatherman, you know. They don't have a report saying hi. They just go, stuff.
Oh goodness.
Anyway, guinea fowl. They're good eating. What do you know of a place where you can get guineas?
You know, I don't. In France, they eat them a lot, and it's called a pintade. It took me a long time to figure out what a pintade was, but they were so delicious. I have tried to get them here. The problem is, like with chickens, they're only good if they're harvested fairly young. You know, they will get... one time I had a friend in Kansas who was, I'll sell you some guinea hens. Of course, they are probably a couple of years old. By the time I bought them and cooked them, they were so tough that it was like a disappointment. So just like if you're growing chickens for meat, you want to... As soon as they have their full growth, that's when you want to eat them. You know, chicken meat is now considered, you know, the commonest, cheapest food in the grocery store. But that was not always true. It's because of the way they mass produce, you know, chickens and hardly pay the farmers to do the, you know, I mean, thousands of birds at a time, which is why we have bird flu, too, because it's, you know, you concentrate that many animals and stuff happens. So chicken used to be like the chicken in a Sunday chicken. It was a special meal because you didn't eat chicken every day the way you do now.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Chickens are bred to be Well, you can get chickens bred to be fully grown or at least ready for butchering, believe it or not, or 6 or 7 months. That's really fast. If you get one of those chickens that aren't quite chickens, what are they called? The big white broilers.
They're bred to have huge breasts because that's, I actually am a dark meat person, but most people seem to like the breasts. I think the dark meat has a little more flavor.
There's more fat in it, and they hold up better under a roasting. Mm-hmm. I've had, you have to brine the breast to make it stay moist.
Oh, yeah.
And so a salt brine, and that works, but, you know, it's a, I would just wondering if you, I think it would be probably fairly lucrative for a farmer to have some guinea fowl, take it to the farmer's market for people.
I don't know about processing guinea fowl, but it couldn't be that much.
Well,
they're smaller.
A little bit smaller than a chicken, but not that much. Mm-hmm. I can remember as a child, my mother had a hat. She was of the hat-wearing generation, a hat with guinea feathers on it. I think I still have it. It was a remarkable little, like, pillbox thing with black and white speckled feathers all over
it.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, the feathers are really pretty. So.
Yeah. They're pretty little birds, and they are loud. If you want a watchdog that is not a dog, guinea fowl. Any predator, anybody coming around will do the same thing.
Geese, ducks, guinea fowl, chickens.
But geese will attack you. The guinea fowl will just make noise.
It's true. They're not big enough to attack.
Yeah, that would be scary. That would be the birds. That would be very Hitchcockian to have that happen. Guinea fowl attack.
So if you want to have chickens as part of your life, realize you may have to do a little modification of your environment because they have needs, just like all of us have needs. We all like chickens,
The predators are many around here. Raccoons, foxes, coyotes, all kinds of weasels. Lana's had some weasel problems. Those are hard because
mink.
Ooh.
Yeah, they're small. Yeah. They can get through wire.
Yeah, they can get through the littlest holes.
It's a challenge, but it is worth it. Here we are talking about chickens. We can talk about chickens till the cows come home. So is that mixing your metaphors or what?
There are advantages, but besides all the predators and the cost, you know, you have the weather to deal with. So you are taking on, you know, another family member almost.
It's just sport. You do it because it's fascinating and
it is
good fun.
And there's eggs.
There's eggs.
And if you stick with a breed and you have a certain kind of flock that's rare, then, you know, like those black chickens with the black skin, that's actually a delicacy and there's a market for that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Very good.
And once you've eaten chickens that eat grass and things like that, see how yellow the yolks are, you don't go back to the grocery store eggs.
No, the grocery store eggs, I can't. Yeah. Yeah, they don't taste the same.
Ha! Good. So, well, thank you for being with us today, Cynthia. Besides talking about chickens, she's also our engineer today, a very multi-talented woman. I want to mention some upcoming things here. At KHOY, tomorrow, this is short notice, is the return of the fiddling duo from Scandinavia, Lynx, L-Y-N-X.
Oh, that was
Lynx,
a great Lynx. Concert.
They're wonderful.
The last
so don't
time
miss
they were
if
here.
You miss
they
them last
are
time.
Delightful.
Don't Wednesday, July 8th, 7
right here
p.m.
in the studio.
Do come. It is good. And this is farther off, but kind of put it in your brain. In September, early September, September 6th, 7th, and 8th, KHOI is planning another book sale.
Oh, we're doing a book sale again. Oh, my.
Yes, aren't
we ambitious?
Good. So, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We gather here to do the Donna Lana Kitchen every Tuesday. Support this fine radio station. We had music by the Barn Owl Band. You heard the music from some French Canadian tunes here, starting out with the Gaspé Reel. Yes. So we've talked about chickens today. Get to know your breakfast. Thanks. Thank a chicken. My name is Lana Natsiko.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Engineering by Cynthia McClure today. Three cheers. Thank you, Cynthia. Eat good food and enjoy life.